And that was something I just produced this week, and I thought I'd share it with you. And with me this morning on KPFK Los Angeles is Bob Dobbs. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Dave.
Yeah, by the way, this is David Porter, and let me just turn my headphones up here a bit. Let's see. The system is pretty strange. And the program we're listening to is Genesis of Music, and I'm really pleased at the amount of publicity these programs have been getting. The Michael Parenti benefit for KPFK garnered a lot of support for this morning's program, Bob. Take it, Bob.
Yeah, you're very low, Dave.
How's that?
That's better.
Yeah, that's...
You were saying something about Michael Parenti?
Yeah, we had a benefit for KPFK with Michael Parenti, and there's a lot of support for this program when the flyers were being handed out by one of your operatives.
Oh, great.
And by the way, let me just say now, because someone's been all over my case because I haven't been doing this enough, if you're interested in more information about Bob, you can call 310-306-7330. Anytime. I tried calling earlier, and there was no answer, but maybe he's there now. Got a couple of things I want to throw at you this morning, Bob. First of all, I was told by one of my sources that there's this play that opened in New York called The Medium, and it's based on the life and predictions of Marshall McLuhan. And a review in the New York Times quoted McLuhan as saying ruefully about the dominant media, quote, "I wish none of these had ever happened," end quote.
Yeah.
Well, come on, you're the one with the mouth. He's supposed to take over from there, Bob.
Well, you didn't ask a question.
I don't need to ask a question for Bob.
Well, are the lines lighting up yet?
Yeah, but there's another one I want to throw at you. You don't have anything to say about the play, then?
Oh, I got a lot to say. I was an advisor to the play, and in the 60s, there was some kind of optimistic mood generated by the mixed corporate media, the form and the content, so people thought that Marshall was for television and for the new electric environment. And in the 90s, when we're in the post-mythic stage of my chart, and people are bombarded by what they perceive as the disservices of the electric environment, they're open to the notion of the disservices of the electric environment. Now, Marshall was neither for or against the electric environment. He just inventoried the services and disservices. So it's interesting, in the 60s, they saw McLuhan as an optimist, and now the Medium is presenting that part of McLuhan that could appear as a pessimist. And that is in tune with the mood. So again, McLuhan falls victim to the mood of the times, and is waked up because the mood generates that interpretation of him, that particular mood. So the negative view of technologies Marshall listed in his inventory as disservices is only one part of Marshall, but that's the part that people respond to now. Okay?
Okay, well, I got another one for you. I figured out why people are getting so stupid, and why people like Ronald Reagan, who... you know, I was discussing this with a representative of the Secretary of State's office yesterday, and he asked me the rhetorical question. He prefaced it with the observation that here we had Governor Ronald Reagan, who decided he was going to solve the problem of the costs of incarcerating and housing the mentally incapable by turning them all out onto the street, and therefore saving the taxpayers all this money. And that's how he solved the problem. Now, I have this theory that America found out some very ugly truths in the 70s about itself. And the result of this was what the columnist George Will described as Jimmy Carter's malaise speech. Carter never used the word malaise. But to me, malaise is kind of a healthy, normal reaction to finding out some ugly truths about what's going on around you and what you're responsible for. But instead, the country seems to have turned to the politics of denial. And as an alcoholic codependent, it refuses to see what's going on. In fact, it gets very angry at anyone who tells it what is going on. So first they've picked two son of alcoholic presidents. The first one was President Ronald Reagan, the president of denial, who put all these people out on the street, and you can see them waltzing all over Anaheim and Fullerton and Los Angeles and everywhere else, probably New York too, maybe even Toronto, although they'd have to cross the border to get there. Well, people are crossing into our country. Why don't we send them up to yours? And then they elect President Bill Clinton, the president of can't we all just get along and pretend there's no problem. But both of these are presidents who are codependents, codependency presidents. And the guy asked me, well, how can you, you know, what is your opinion of this, that a governor who turns all these people out on the street to save the taxpayers' money, never mind the hidden costs, was elected president? Take it, Bob.
Well, we're all homeless, you know, in the discarnate virtual space we're living in now. So I think the attention on the homeless is a obsession because of the mirror effect of our own reality. We're homeless, therefore we can't do nothing but stare at the homeless. But we're interpreting the physically homeless as an approximation of our discarnate homelessness. And we're going to be releasing everybody because we can't find a place to contain them. You can't contain anything in electric conditions. So everybody's released and everybody's homeless, and this is just the beginning. Wait till whole nations become homeless.
Okay, I got one more for you, and this is the conclusion. Like I say, this is what people have done. Well, I finally figured out why people have become so stupid. Now, I don't know if you read this in the paper yesterday. Do you know what the red tide is?
Yeah, wasn't that Khrushchev?
No. I don't mean the political red tide. I mean the one that lives in the ocean that kills fish.
Where does it come from?
It's a form of algae, and what it does is it gives off a toxin in the water that kills almost everything. That's why you're never supposed to eat fish or a shellfish that you get from any time of the month has an R in it.
Right. That was one of the mistakes I made on the Secret Council 10 about 20 years ago. I remember that. I'm sorry.
Well, you made another mistake because I was reading in the paper this scientist was studying some new dinoflagellate that they had found that goes through about 20 different cycles in its life before it returns to cycle one. And anytime a fish, it lives in the mud or the sand, anytime a fish comes near, it gives off this toxin, kills the fish, and then it begins, it's going through its 20 life cycles before it returns to cycle number one. And even putting a piece of fish meat in the water caused this reaction to start. Well, it didn't just give the toxin off into the water. It gave it off into the laboratory air. And the scientist began to wig out and yell at his wife for not coiling up the vacuum cleaner cord. And he began to forget he'd done things the day before and then the hour before. And then he couldn't get a sentence out, much as the problem I'm having this morning. Well, that's just because it's 7:14 a.m. But he was also excreting phosphates at an incredible rate. And they found he was being poisoned by this neurotoxin that was in the air from this dinoflagellate that he'd been working with under laboratory conditions. They took him out and began to detoxify him, and he has more or less recovered, but he doesn't have any memory of the time that he was wigging out because that memory never was imprinted long-term on his brain. Man's pollution has been causing this dinoflagellate to multiply in the East, they haven't studied the West yet, at an incredible rate. And I figure this is what's going wrong with people in this world. Our pollution is causing this newly discovered dinoflagellate to poison the air, and it's making people stupid. Comment?
Well, the play The Medium points out the larger stupidity generation factor of the electric bombardment. I think that, yeah, our physical bodies are suffering under hardware and physical pollution, but the software pollution prevents us from dealing with the hardware pollution as well as create an incredible stupidity on the software level. So let's deal with media ecology first before we deal with the first nature ecology.
Well, I
because
think
people are, you're just seeing stupidity in terms of people's singular bodies.
No, I'm and also seeing it. I'm
stupidity
also
stupidity of collective entities, of whole groups, corporations, and nations via this electric numbing.
Well, I'm seeing it also as the fact that people are choosing the stupidest of entertainments. Well, it's another thing of codependency. You want to escape. You want to do anything but look at the problem. You want to go back in time, even if it's just the last week.
Yeah, but it's the kind of stupidity that is manifest in entertainment is an ersatz identity. It actually gives somebody an ersatz perspective and gives them the feeling of having a slight sense of order and intelligence. And that's because that form of art, ordered intelligence, is the only vestige left in a cosmic stupidity on a cosmic plane. So well, it's a nostalgic form of stupidity, or a nostalgic form of identifiable stupidity that flips into, via the tetrad process, a form of intelligence. So people are getting stupider because they're feeling smarter, using obsolete anthropomorphic pattern recognition generated by the cyberpunk phenomenon, Mondo 2000 and Henry Kissinger and everybody else.
Well, there you have it, folks. Bob Dobbs, the ultimate optimist.
Now, thank you.
Finally, I wanted to, before we start going to calls, and we are getting a couple coming in, just hold those, please. Do you have anything you'd like to relate to our listeners about what the, you know, this play has been getting a lot of publicity, too, pre-publicity in the local press. Just
well, you can thank me for that.
Well, of course. I know. It's just like some Grammy nominations. You know, some of us plant things in the media.
Yeah, but no, it's time that...
Wait a minute.
Parts of McLuhan, and hopefully we'll be able to do the same for Lyndon LaRouche and Frank Zappa and all the holy offices.
Well, I was going to ask you, why did you? What's the basic theme of the third installment of Who's Forgotten Furry Lynch?
President Richard Nixon.
Who?
Richard Nixon.
Who?
Didn't you hear the show?
Who?
Sorry.
That name doesn't register on my memory banks. I've been around algae too long.
Yeah, you've been made stupid by the recent revival. But if you noticed, you had the Evergreens explain Richard Nixon to Mae Brussel. You had Dr. Beter explaining the very important role that President Nixon played in 1982 in saving us from nuclear war. And I think that's part of the reason the elites acknowledged favorably Nixon in their funeral and their wake scenes a few weeks ago. They know what he did in relation to China in 1982 and saved us. I was part of that operation. So you probably are bamboozled, Dave, because you don't know those inside things, but you heard it on your own show, thanks to Dr. Beter.
Well,
so Richard Nixon was a furry lint who we finally remembered.
That's what makes the show so interesting for me. It's always a learning experience. By the way, a friend of Tony Mostrom's, wrote an article describing a possible deal between Richard Nixon and the Mafia between 62 and 66, that in exchange for something unspecified, they would bankroll him to get into the presidency. And that ties in with something I was told after the election of 84 about Ronald Reagan by a low-level mafioso that, yeah, they got him in, and it's all going to be taken care of, and it was.
Well, that's true. All major political positions have to work through the mafia, since they're like the PTA of the United States.
What?
No, really, they are. It's called organized crime. It's crime that's organized.
Which one is the parent and which one is the teacher?
Yeah, the audience is the employer. The stars and celebrities are the students. Frank was aware of that. I mean, the audience feeds on itself in the global theater, but the mafia is part of organized hardware environment, so it's organized crime, and it's necessary to keep order in the abandoned cities.
Okay, I'm not even going to bite on that one. You want to go to a phone call?
Yeah.
Okay. Good morning. You're on with Bob Dobbs.
Good morning, Bob, from your Potted for Apples clubhouse here in Venice.
Yeah, Mark.
We wanted to ask this
morning. How do you get on first all the time?
What's that, Bob?
How do you get on first all the time?
I think it's my collective clairvoyant skills.
Yeah, and doing your homework.
Yes.
Good. You earned it.
Okay. Bob, as we learn more about furry here in the last few installments.
You like that last show you heard?
Yep.
Dr. Beter.
Yeah, Dr. Beter hitting us with some heavy energy this morning.
Yes.
As we've learned more about furry and as I begin to deduce furry as representative of us as media ecology participants.
Yes.
Which character in Finnegan's Wake most closely resembles furry?
Hosty, the person who wrote the ballad on page 44.
Okay.
You know the character Hosty? He wrote the ballad of Curse Arrive?
Slightly, Bob. If you can expand a bit, that would be great.
Well, he's the one who wrote the scurrilous ballad that sort of lampooned H.C.E., Humphrey Chimpton Earwicker.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say Hosty is the closest to furry lint. And notice the pun. The medium is the host. The content is the guest. So Hasti also, in a non-anthropomorphic way, refers to the media within the play. So within the drama Finnegan's Wake. So Hasti is representative of both figure and ground, so he's the one who's Furrylin, because Furrylin can be a form as well as a content.
Okay.
In other words, today, we remembered radio via Dave Porter's show.
Mm-hmm.
Who's forgotten Furry Lint as radio? In other words, there was an intense radio experience from 6 to 7, hopefully for the next hour and a half.
Oh, right.
So we retrieved as a holopathic phenomenon radio as a formal experience. That's a Furry Lint, too.
Okay, on one level. And so then on the television level as well?
When TV is intense.
Okay.
I don't know when you would announce TV's intense at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I'm on it.
Or unless it's live.
Yeah. You could say a press conference is. The word making the market via the virtual President Clinton.
Well, or any time that it's live television, then there's the illusion of the mass consciousness.
Yes.
When are you going to be on TV, Bob?
Can't release that information today.
Check in.
No, I just can't.
Right,
not that I don't know, but I can't. There are certain constrictions due to the fact the Mafia runs local politics.
Oh. Well, Bob, the rest of that question, the question would be also to go back to the last show, which when we were talking about crop circles, whether or not there could be a tetrad generated for them.
Yeah.
Did we ever get an answer, yes or no, about that from you? Whether we could make a tetrad for a crop circle? And what in Finnegan's Wake parallels this?
In the next few years, we'll know the answer to the crop circles. And again, I can't release that information. Oh, I've already told you that from the booties.
Yeah,
but that's as
that.
Far as I'm going to go until it is proven, and their presence will be proven. Their source of making the crop circles will be present, and then you will be able to look at that phenomenon and look at them and decide whether they're human or not.
And what part of Finnegan's Wake parallels this development?
The first thunder, page 3, the fall. The first thunder, page 3, is, if you notice, it's about Phoenix Park, before the fall. So the crop circles are returning us to that point when we contact the civilization that existed before the fall.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we come from the booties. They come from us. And there is a separation that happened millions of years ago, and we are going to be reawakened to that connection once the crop circles are explained or the causes of them are visible. And then we will be pre-fall, pre-lapsarian.
You mean when we realize the new owner's manual, so to speak?
The new what?
The new owner's manual, the new operating guide.
Yeah, not an owner's manual. You know the electric varmint can't be bought, sold, or stolen.
Okay, well, I only meant in the sense of the realization of the knowledge of our present environment.
Right, it's not that they're superior to us. That's important. Any UFO doctrine that propounds that we are going to learn from them is erroneous. They are fascinated by our dimension. Our situation is we will be by theirs. It's going to be a codependent sharing because both of us, them and us, are in an identity crisis situation due to the electronic implosion. So they will be good neighbors.
But will they come before or after the calamity?
That's why, it's a very good point. That's why I can't announce exactly what's going to happen, because that is still being worked out.
Well, do we know what the calamity will be?
Yeah, it's already happened.
So does it have to do with certain pink cover-ups of planetary explosions?
No, the cataclysm is in simple terms, the political cataclysm that's happened around the whole world.
Oh, okay.
It's not a geographical cataclysm. It's the breakdown of social order, which has happened since 1989.
So this is not the cataclysm of the United States risking the existence of the entire planet by shooting up rockets with plutonium to send satellites to explore foreign planets with breeder reactors that could cause major changes in our solar system structure?
That could happen if the breakdown of social order creates that level of panic. But the cause of it is the political cataclysm, social cataclysm. That could be a side effect.
Yeah, but an environmental cataclysm of solar system proportions would obviously have large and far-reaching social effects in disrupting normal hierarchies and operating systems.
Well, if you look at my chart in the second CD, the breakdown of the universal stage from 1960 to 1977 under the computer and government, the universal includes astral planes. We've already got cataclysms on the psychic planes, the internal astral, etheric, and causal planes, as well as the physical plane. So to worry about the effect on our physical plane, our soul system, is puny compared to the all-encompassing cataclysm that's happened on the psychic plane and that and the post-death plane, the Bardo plane. That is why the crop circle agents are making contact with us, since they're aware of that plane a little more than we are. And if you look at the chart from 1977 to 1990, you have the breakdown of the mythic stage. The mythic stage is like an ontology, an ontological level of cataclysm that affects even what we will interpret as God later. So it's a cataclysm so big that all of consciousness is included when I say the breakdown of social order. That includes order on the death planes.
Aren't these physical effects, though, aren't they top-down effects which become bottom-up causes? And in this case, the physical effects are merely crystallizations of hidden environments that then trigger the bottom-up awareness?
Yes. If you think of the cataclysm as something we brought on ourselves via our extensions, then that's bottom-up. We did it in general to ourselves. And you're right, the top-down effects are the top-down crises are effects of the breakdown in the ground. And the ground is the bottom-up situation. So what you said is exactly correct.
But will more people come around to Bob's Media Ecology if Jupiter blows up and the...
That's right, on July 16th.
Or will more people come around to Bob's Media Ecology if we have global blackouts, or if we have men from, let's just say, Mars, even though they don't have to be from Mars, come and land on the Mormon's front lawn, you know.
I think one of the more positive reasons people come around to Bob's Media Ecology is that my wife, Connie, will present the cure for AIDS to the world, and that will really have a positive...
The mirror technique?
Beg your pardon?
The mirror technique?
The mirror technique, yes. When that is presented to the world, that will have a positive tone to the phrase Bob Rule Lockdown.
And where will we,
Bob Rule. So even though the collapse of the physical and the software pollution will bring people around to Bob Media Ecology, I think it's going to be great that Connie will help me by presenting that, which will give a hope for the world.
Will you think that hope will begin the receptivity to Bob's Media Ecology?
Yeah, in all meanings of the word media.
By restoring our hope for survival, or
yes,
and when do we know when these like techniques will be allowed for public consumption or explained to the public?
I can't talk about it yet.
Okay,
but you can be assured it's coming.
Okay. And one last question: Butch the Electron wants to know why Charlie Parker is Furry Lynn's favorite music.
Because I spent a lot of time in the 40s and 50s in New York, as well as in Paris, and when I influenced Bob Marshall to make this production, Who's Forgotten Fairyland, he picked up some of my own particular nostalgia, psychically.
So it's not just that, it's also that we didn't leave 1945, and that Charlie Parker was probably the hottest music of that time, most revolutionary, and...
Yeah, the hottest mood mud?
What?
The hottest mood mud.
The hottest mood mud, and that everyone in their attempt to remodel modern music is basically recapitulating the Charlie Parker.
That's exactly correct, and also remember it was called Bebop.
Bebop. And Bob
Bebop. Bebop music.
Yes.
There it is, right in the phrase.
Just remember not to beep when you should have bopped. All right. Boobop shabam, Bob. Time to clear the waves for somebody else, man. Kudos to you, and we miss you down here in Venice.
I'll be back.
All right.
Well, that was pretty good. Klugemop, by the way.
Bebop.
I have a couple of things I want to throw at you. First of all, I finally started reading Finnegan's Wake.
Yay!
And it's extremely difficult to read unless you read it out loud.
That's the beginning, but a simple way is to use the book as a vehicle for contemplation. Always remember, for a beginning precept, that you're looking at a book that's just portraying the shortwave radio environment of the 30s and 40s. They may not have called it shortwave, but whatever you call the radio environment that Joyce had in his Paris apartment in the late 20s and early 30s, he just mapped that out on the book. So the collage of languages is what happens when you can listen to a European radio station. And that was just put into book form as a mirror of his time. That's the beginning, so you don't want to get too concerned about missing the meaning of the content. Then once you sort of get used to looking at the book that way, it's like a fast scan, you then get Roland McHugh's annotations, and he has taken the top critical interpretations of each line, top three shortlist critical interpretations from the last 40 years, and you use that to look into the particulars, and then you'll see the particulars spiral back to the general meaning that the book contains the history of all media, not just radio. So that's what you do. You oscillate between the form and the content, Dave.
I was just noting it's
did
the way...
Did you get that?
Yeah, but I'm talking about more of the phonetic equivalence that he uses.
Yeah, it's best to be read out loud, there's no doubt. But then the sound you hear melts into the silence of tactile space, and tactile space is silence. So remember, the page of Finnegan's Wake looks like pointless painting by Surratt. So you're looking at the mosaic mesh of a TV screen. Whenever you get stoned and look at the pulsating dots of a television screen, you can see all kinds of images in it. Well, look at the page of Finnegan's Wake as if you're looking at a television screen. And in my book, Fatted Communion with Bob Dobbs, Arthur Croker develops a whole interpretation of our times taken from Baudrillard based on the reality of the TV screen as the ground for our media landscape. So look at the page of Finnegan's Wake as the pulsating dots of TV. So just contemplate on the form in relation to our time rather than the content of the book.
No, I'm just trying to get through the narrative.
The narrative is there.
It's just sometimes
narrative.
You have to speak the words out loud, and then you understand the word that he's using.
Yeah, but what the words you hear are not the same as the words you see.
That's true. That's what my point is.
Yeah, well,
you're being redundant, Bob.
I'm listening to a Dave Porter show.
Well, that's no fair using my own words against me. By the way, before we go to another caller, I'd like to say you're listening to KPFK Los Angeles. I'm David Porter. The program is Genesis of a Music, and today it's a Bob Dobbs special. Bob Dobbs will be on again July 23rd, and will present the fourth part of his radio play, Who's Forgotten Furry Lint? And for more information, you can call 310-306-7330. We'll be giving that number out again. And I think I've been handed here one of our many fax numbers came in, and got a message here that someone says, you have appeared on TV. First of all, you've been disguised as Bill Clinton and also his alter ego, Jay Leno.
Well, some people say that Bob Dobbs is the television form itself, and that's a pretty accurate interpretation. So it's hard for me to be on TV when I am TV.
Okay, with that, I'm going to go to another caller. You're the lucky one. You're on the air with Bob Dobbs.
Hi. Is this KPFK?
Yes, it is.
Oh, great. I'm going through so many random dials, I don't know which is the telephone and which is the radio, but... Is this how the Church of the Subgenius started? Is this the J.R. Bob Dobbs that was in Texas that used to be on the Bob Nelson show on KPFA?
Yes.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, this is Steve Mays, and I phoned in years ago to the Bob Nelson show, and now I'm at 1-310-671-8494 in Inglewood. We got your Bolognese Gamelan tape, and I'm also telling everybody at J&B's Little Bali Restaurant at 310-674-9835 about KPFK. And it just goes on and on like that endlessly. So thank you very much for clarifying that point. That's beautiful.
You're welcome.
I think I should take some marbles. Yeah, talk about giving out free plugs to your friends. You know, I'd never do anything like that for my program.
Well, that's because you have responsibilities, Dave.
I know. You're on the air with Bob Dobbs.
Yeah, hi, Bob. Yes, I heard you on the last show and got a hold of your CD and met Jerry, and I've been having a hell of a lot of fun.
Are you Scott?
Digging into this stuff.
Is your name Scott?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I have four questions for you this morning. And maybe if we take a couple minutes with each one, we can get through all four of them.
Well, you've done your homework, so you're justified.
Okay, great. I'm wondering if, and I'm referring to McKenna's time wave here, if mid-1996 and if December 2012 are significant.
No, McKenna's timeline refers to at least at the latest point, 1977. That's when all the media environments that were our extensions flashed into disappearance. And on the CD, Everything's Disappeared is a kind of a retrieval of the nostalgia of that point. You know the song Everything's Disappeared on the first CD?
Yeah.
Okay, that happened in 77. The biological timeline that McKenna talks about refers to a nostalgia to recover the first nature. But since some biotechnology is going to rebuild the first nature, where our bodies will have merged with the cybernetic environment, then his timeline can at best refer to information, if you think of information as including the first nature as well as a technological nature. And information overload, or the point of where we can't decode information anymore, which is its flash point, I would say happened by 1977. I think that McKenna's use of McLuhan and Joyce is limited because he's thinking in verbal terms. He thinks of language as just verbal. He doesn't know that tranquilizers and other media are post-verbal, non-verbal technologies. As a matter of fact,
is the idea that history...
I'll say that again.
...to transcend itself in 2012. It seems to dovetail with the Mayan calendar, so there seems to be, a heavy archetype around these dates.
Yeah, those are what I'll call tribal anthropomorphic archetypes. If you read the liner notes of my first CD, I talk about the post-Jungian technological archetypes. In other words, every technology creates an environment which has an archetypal effect on us. Therefore, if you're referring to cultural archetypes and not the general technological archetypes that extended our collective human sensorium, you're not going to gauge the time of when everything disappears on the information level accurately. So all the prophecies by various cultures, especially the Mayan calendar, pick 2012, which is variation of 1-2-2, so you get the Club 22 in there, which is on my CD. The point is that because they weren't aware, and no culture was aware until the 20th century of the technological archetypes, then they were going to misfire on the actual precise timing. And that's what Stang did when he put out the Book of the Subgenius. He has the Axis landing in July 5th, 1998, when they actually landed in 1988. And I featured interviews with them on my show. And...
Well, how is it that McKenna, coming at it through the vehicle of the I Ching, came up with a model that seemed to reflect the Mayan calendar, which he wasn't aware of at the time?
Well, that's because of the medium he used, his Amazonian drugs. The ayahuasca drug comes out of that culture. So that particular plant is a generator and an absorber of the Mayan culture. It's part of their history.
Yeah, he got it from psilocybin.
Yeah, whatever South American drug you wanted, he is using drugs from that tropical region. And the Mayan culture comes out of that tropical region. So the drug contains information that is biased via the culture. It's a two-way thing. So he's projecting that cultural bias on the media landscape of virtual reality we live in today.
So the plant itself contains the information.
That culture of information.
The source of the information?
Well, it's like when you die. We all go through the same physical and non-physical process when we die, but the hallucinations that we project as we go into the white light are culturally conditioned. So the drug that McKenna uses projects and contains, and the user feels and sees the cultural human element around that area where the drug grows.
Oh.
You know, the user is the content, so the culture is the content. So McKenna misses the meaning of Finnegan's Wake because he didn't understand the electric drug we're on right now. which is a global theater drug. It involves all, it transcends all cultures. It's an archetypal extension of our central nervous system. It's acultural in the sense that you can't, no culture can project what happens in the electric experience. So with that knowledge, you wouldn't make a timing based on a Mayan calendar for when everything disappears.
Yeah.
Because information, the way McKenna uses it, is usually imagistic, alphabetic, or sound. We have to realize that information by the cultural, no, the technological archetypes of our media are information, is information that is very difficult to image, to see, and to hear. That's why there's no content on a certain level of Finnegan's Wake.
Mm-hmm.
Joyce began to pick up the collective archetypes of our technological extension, and they're embedded in the Ten Thunders.
Yeah. Now, you have a calendar, though. Isn't 2020 the end of the mythic stage?
The mythic stage ends from 19... The mythic stage goes from 1977 to 1990. The lockdown Bob Rule phase goes from 1990 to 2020. So the mythic stage ended in 1990. And that was a sort of a after-image hallucination of the fact everything ended in 1977 at the end of the universal stage. So we had a replay of the ending. It was like the 80s were the world seeing, like a drowning person, seeing its life pass before himself at that point of death. That happened in the 80s with the virtual reality replay of images. MTV, in short, okay?
Well, when you say...
Now, the mythic, you know, so after
we
from 1990
to
2020, it's
the
lockdown Bob Rule
phase. And I mean,
that's
what happened to the material universe? I mean, we're still physical beings. I'm real confused around this whole issue.
It feels like you're a physical being. It certainly does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But language is the essence of us, and the ability to transmit information is the essence of humans versus the rest of nature. We have the uncanny ability to transmit information and expand our range of information. Let's call it learning. That makes us different. Now, the very advantage we have of learning causes us to believe those learning systems. So it would be very hard for you to determine where your physical body ends and your language capacity begins.
Well, would you say that the physical body, the physical world that we, in essence, died to is still there someplace, but we're no longer participating in it? Well,
yes.
What happened to
it? Remember I said in a few shows ago that the goal of Lockdown Bob Rule is to make people realize what I'm talking about and then realize they didn't disappear. But they have to really go into it deeply with faculties they don't have yet, unless they study my holy offices. With those faculties, you begin to perceive the environment you actually are living in, but it's unconscious like an archetype. And once you see through that, then you realize you're still here. So it's a replay of Alan Watts' mystical hidden center. Our physical bodies now are the hidden center inside this new virtual scape we live in, virtual media scape.
Okay.
So it's a matter of communication. It's a matter of sharing. Like, your body is not affected by media, is not affected by language, but you don't know that. You identify with language, and you're identifying with new linguistic extensions, all technologies, and you're not aware of the effects. So because you don't know that, you think you are language, and you think you are media, but you are not media. And
so I think that I'm user is content, but I'm not.
That's right. If you look in Counterblast by Marshall McLuhan, there's one sentence where he says, no media affect the citadel of consciousness. In other words, and this is the part of my book, Static Communion with Bob Dobbs, that William Irwin Thompson represents that school of mystical perception of the hidden center that's not affected by anything. It's a Vedanta doctrine, and it's probably in all secret societies of all religions. But you're not able to fully understand that unless you understand the dimension you're in now. Because that idea that your hidden center is not affected by media can lead to a Gnostic bias. The perversion of the Gnostic bias is that the material world is hell, it's evil, and should be avoided. Well, we have a Gnostic bias towards our technological landscapes just by our impercipience. Page 81 of Finnegan's Wake, the viability of vicinals is invincible if invisible. Top line of page 81 in Finnegan's Wake. That's the situation we're in. But, of course, this is a a specter, a threat made to you. It's not made to your hidden center, which is not affected by these vicinals. But you're not aware of that. You have to figure out what you are made and what you're aware of and what you're affected by and what is not affecting you. You aren't aware of that right now.
Mm-hmm.
You may be, Terrence McKenna is trying to bring back the archaic revival and say that all technology was a failure, a ghost, that left our pristine primitive condition of a citadel of consciousness on the collective level. But he is trying to retrieve to a first nature situation without an awareness of what the citadel of consciousness is in our new terms. That's difficult, what I just said.
So I say, what's the process of becoming aware of that? And you say, Bob, right?
Yeah, and what's Bob? It's study me, study the sources I offer in my book, and listen to the tapes of me, and then talk to me.
Okay. I'd like to get a definition from you. I've heard you use the term Manipian tactility.
Yes.
And I'd like to get a concise definition of Manipian and a concise definition of tactility, and then what you mean when you put those two words together.
Okay, Manipian satire is defined in conventional literary histories as a satire based consisting of philosophies, ideas, a satirizing of the intellectual currency of the time. All right? Just think of a satire of ideas.
All right.
But the real history of Manipian satire should be defined as a satire on groups, on crowds, on the general. And since we live in crowds today, in technological archetypes, which is another phrase for crowds, Manipian satire is more appropriate in the 20th century. Think of Hannah Arendt's The Origins of Totalitarianism. Because we're inside a totalitarian environment, no, several totalitarian environments, then we need to look at these environments as crowds. Therefore, we use the technique of Manipian satire, since that satirizes crowds. And in relation to tactility, which is the essential characteristic of the electric environment, tactility is that part of the central nervous system that organizes all the other sensory data into a coherent consciousness. Now, we've extended that with our virtual reality, which is tactile, in the sense that it interrelates all the previous media of our history and presents a coherent, almost satellite-like environment, a man-made environment that we live in, a human-made environment. The satellite is the extension of the planet. The satellite contains TV, radio, newspapers, all previous media. That extension of the switching platform in our brains, that is tactility, that has been extended in this mixed corporate media environment we live in. But it is becoming, since we're overusing it, a satire on us, on the crowds of us. So Manipian tactility is a satire on the crowd expression of tactility, which is the electric environment, via the means of crowd satire, Manipus. All right?
All right.
You see what I'm saying there?
Yeah. And would you say our chakra system resonates to the electronic envelope that we reside within?
Yeah, did you say, I didn't get the first two words. What system?
Our chakra system.
Oh, our chakra system. Well, that's part of the, on my chart from 1960 to 1977, the universal stage includes the inner tripping world of our bardo states, the astral, etheric, and causal bodies. Those bodies, as outlined by William Irwin Thompson in his writings,
mm-hmm.
are the content of our first nature, of our bodies. They're part of our hidden center.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense, our body has our physical body plus those other three bodies. That is the whole composite of the human structure made by the Creator.
All right?
Now, that is being affected. The astral plane, the etheric body, and the chakras are being challenged by this virtual technological landscape that we're inside now. So, yes, it does affect the astral system, and that's the crisis I was talking about at the beginning of the program on the universal stage level from 1960 to 1977. Then popularized in the 80s by the Battle of the Mediums, you know, Ramtha versus Cosmic Awareness, or the Evergreens. That chaos on the inner planes is part of the reason why the crop circles are happening, and why solar system or civilizations in other parts of our universe, not just our solar system, are needing to talk to us, to communicate with us.
So yes, the virtual landscape affects us, and you look at William Irwin Thompson's book, The American Replacement of Nature, he discusses Hans Moravec's vision, who was interviewed in a recent Monda 2000, his vision of the takeover of the downloading of our minds or of our etheric bodies inside a computer matrix that will make us immortal in those terms. That's a threat, or that's a service coming in the future.
Uh-huh. Why do you say that the computer environment caused the implosion of the astral and physical planes?
Because of the extension of our central nervous system, and our central nervous system includes the chakras.
Yeah, in what way is the computer environment an extension of the nervous
system? Well, the whole electric environment, since the telegraph, is an extension of the electric insides of us. So
yeah.
The electric insides of us have been extended since the telegraph environment.
Yeah.
It's just the computer environment reifies memory, preserves memory, and sort of accomplishes the efficient transmission and containment of data, which is a very important part of the central nervous system, at electric speeds, you know, at the speed of light or post-speed of light. The computer is the greatest extension of that processing aspect of our central nervous system. So that's why it penetrated the deepest levels of our universe on the outer and the inner planes. It does break through the veil.
Mm.
And that's why you have the New Age sensibilities and the common acceptance of reincarnation philosophies and Oriental philosophies, which had an awareness of those other dimensions. But they are now obsolete because we have a bigger crisis, because the inner planes are being contained within this electric extension. So that's a hard thing to believe. But when you realize that the mind is language, and when you die and you're on another plane, you're still thinking, you're still aware, you're still processing language, then you realize language is the container, the matrix of all of creation. And computers are a new extension of language.
Mm-hmm.
So it affects the other dimensions, because the other dimensions have language within it.
Well, Bob, I have lots more questions. I hope to speak with you again to go into it some more. And I thank you, and thank you, David. I'm going to get off the phone now.
Okay, you're welcome, Scott.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, Bob, I have a couple requests.
Okay? Go ahead.
First, say KPFK Los Angeles.
KPFK Los Angeles.
And second, you know, in about 11 days or so, we've got the fund drive coming up. And I noticed that the switchboard is really lighting up, and it never really does light up during the fund drive. So I was wondering if you'd do a little testimonial for me for KPFK and identify yourself and then ask people to call in and pledge support to keep this kind of programming on the air.
Right now?
Yes. Just identify yourself and ask people to call in and pledge their support.
This is your radio, Bob Dobbs. I'm the electric environment. You're wearing me. But I only appear as content on KPFK in Los Angeles. I think that you should reward that station for allowing me to penetrate its environment. Please send help.
Say please send money.
And, okay, do it again. Please send the poor man's credit card money.
Very good. Thank you. Okay. I keep dropping off, too. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello. Is Bob Nelson available or reachable at all anymore?
Nope. He's not available.
What happened to him?
Well, see, that was part of the Stang operation. And when I was in Dallas in the late 70s, he met me. And he was inspired by what he learned from me. So he created the parody church called the Church of the Subgenius, which was inspired by me, but I had nothing to do with it. And many of the people that got involved with Stang's church in the early 80s have disappeared.
I've noticed that. In fact, I tried to look one of them up in the DMZ, and their records were all gone.
But everything's disappeared.
That's right.
What about Doug Wellman? Wasn't he a police officer in real life?
Yes. I mean, there are some of them in San Francisco, puzzling evidence, and Reverend Stang's show is being broadcast on an L.A. college station.
and a UCLA college station. I saw a flyer for it a few months ago, started in April. So you can hear the remnants of the church in your local area.
Well, 4 in the morning on KPFA, aren't they still on Saturday mornings running the Subgenius Hour of Slack?
Yes, some of them are. Yep, there's Puzzling Evidence, and a few other people are doing that. I think Negative Land assists them sometimes. They're part of their group.
Well, what do you think of them?
Well, they're fun. It's a humorous interpretation of me, but it's
you.
Yes, it's an interpretation of me.
Wait a minute now. I have a picture of this man on my wall, and he looks like a young Dick Van Dyke, and he's got a slick back hair with a pipe sticking out of his mouth at one angle. Are you that individual?
That is a picture of my father. All right. Now I'm 72 years old now, and that was a picture of my father that Stang saw in the late 70s, and he decided to use that to express an interpretation of me. But I don't look like that.
No, well, after all, that is your father.
It is my father. I can prove that. When I get on TV and have to prove who I am, which you people are anticipating, I will show the family photo album.
And that image, the original incarnation of that image, will be revealed to us all.
Yeah, well, it'll be revealed as my father, but it's not important. My father was not a subgenius. He was not as aware as I was. He had a certain role in the oligarchy in Europe that I was born into, and that gave me access to members of the Secret Council of Ten, but he was more like a Joseph in relation to Jesus. You know, he just fathered me.
Well, sir, that image, though, has been plastered all over this planet. I found copies in Berkeley. I took a image off the wall, and I have a perfectly preserved copy of it that I spread around myself. And I've seen it on computer icons, and someday it'll be carried surreptitiously in some spacecraft outside the Earth. Now, the significance of that image must not be underestimated.
That's right. I mean, my father does get credit for being my father, right? The thing is, that image is the American hologram in iconic form. It's kinetic space. America is a product of the movie, radio, automobile culture of the 20s and 30s. And Bob Dobbs, as presented by that image, is a distillation of that kinetic culture. Now, the discarnate culture, the electric environment that we're living in today, the virtual landscape, it has to be imaged in another way, and that way you have not had an image of presented to you yet. You've only heard me via verbal means.
Like this.
Beg your pardon?
Like, such as this.
That's right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you. By the way, Bob, I've seen you on TV.
Yeah, there are a few images that caught me,
yeah,
unfortunately,
I've
hope they're not presented too widely yet. Because it'll confuse people.
Well, I've seen you on my TV.
When?
I don't know. It's you just appear every now and then. It's on my TV. It's not on any of my neighbors' televisions. It's just on my TV.
Yeah, it's not the Bob with the pipe image.
No, it's you.
Good.
And it looks like we caught you in one of your contingent field offices.
Well, I think that you working with me are going to have unforeseen effects within your own psyche. So this, you might want to put that in the radio promo for the fundraising, make a testimonial about what's happened to you as being honored to be the host of my presentation.
Well, it's just hallucinating, but no more than usual.
Yeah.
Okay.
You were prepared, Dave.
Yeah. Okay,
your
caller.
Your name is in Finnegan's Wake. You're the Porter family. I mean, how is your family doing under this?
Well, they keep drinking up the profits.
And that's what the family in HC in Finnegan's Wake does.
Well, of course. Caller, you're on the air. You're the lucky one.
Yes. How close to a Luddite are you?
I'm not a Luddite. The Luddites were right because, you know, from the 17th and 18th century, Western civilization went into a spiral of intensification of visual space, which caused the blind disservices we all know as the scourge of the white man or of the Western Europe, of the European. What was the question?
How close to a Luddite are you?
Right, I just tuned out there. So because the Luddites would have prevented us from that exaggerated visual space effect of the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries, It would have been good if they had won. But we cannot stop the evolution of technologies, and the Luddites would have realized that they could have, if they could have orchestrated a media ecology situation, which was very hard before the electric environment, which is the only environment that elicits total collective consciousness, so therefore it's easy to do media ecology under electric conditions. So the Luddites would have had to orchestrate visual space a little more gently, but allowed it to flip into the electric technologies, because you can't stop the technologies. So overall, technology should not be destroyed, but they should be orchestrated in relation to various cultures and the sensibilities of those cultures. And that's very hard to do pre-electric conditions. People just didn't have the collective sensory perception of the effects of their own inventions and their own creativity. So I'm not a Luddite. You could say I'm a temporary Luddite in terms of offering a media fast for 6 months and turning off part of the electric environment, but I would also bring back the electric environment, turn it back on so that we could go into it awake again rather than walking through the development of technologies as a somnambulist, which is going to happen as if we don't have a media fast and become aware of the electric water we're swimming in. So I'm not a Luddite.
It appears that we're in a paradox because our human psyche needs to investigate things, and yet do we have the judgment to control what we discover?
That's right. Paradox is one of the most profound perceptions that humans can have in the learning process. And part of media ecology is for us to collectively become aware of the paradoxical archetypes of our technological evolution. You know, and the visual space is quite contradictory in its characteristics to kinetic space and tactile space. But they are extensions of us. They're part of our history and part of our future. We've got to learn to surf within the paradoxes of these archetypes. And it can be done.
You know, right now, I feel like it's a race between our wisdom rising to the occasion before our technology destroys us.
That's right, and there is no inevitability as long as there is a willingness to contemplate what's happening. I'm giving people the means to contemplate. The traditional wisdom of any culture, including Mayan culture, is inappropriate to the post-cultural situation we're talking about. I mean, Baudrillard and certain postmodern theorists are beginning to have expressed this problem. But I think that my background, I've been on this planet for 72 years, my experience in all levels of knowledge is the best map of the program we need to get into a position to contemplate the situation. Now, Finnegan's Wake is the beginning point to contemplate what we've done to ourselves. And if we can contemplate with an awareness of the private civil consciousness, which has no effects from the media environment, if we can contemplate from that position, not just the traditional mystical hidden center, but the new hidden center, then we will survive.
You know, I just finished reading Neil Postman's Amusing Ourselves to Death.
Yeah.
But I haven't read the one, Four Reasons for the Abolition of...
Elimination of Television by Gerrymander.
Could you briefly, what are those four reasons?
Well, first of all, you get Gerrymander's new book, In the Absence of the Sacred, I think it's called. And Mander confesses his misunderstanding of McLuhan. Now, Marsh McLuhan thought the book, the Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television, was a terrible book because it missed the tetrad effect of television. Television should not be eliminated. You know, it's a Luddite view in that book. Well, Mander realized that more and more. From my point of view, from my knowledge, he realized that because we're in the post-mythic stage, which was 1977 to 1990, so many people are more balanced with their left hemisphere and right hemisphere in their projections of what to do today. So Mander reassesses his ignorance of Marsh McLuhan in that book. So I definitely recommend you go to his new book, The Absence of the Sacred, to get a view that obsolesces and makes irrelevant the view expressed in the Four Arguments for Elimination of Television. So don't worry about that first book. That book is a big error.
Oh, okay.
So go to the second book and look up the sections on Marshall in the index, and you can quickly scan
man, there's new realizations, which a lot of the world is realizing, and Neil Postman is part of that movement. Postman is a better McLuhanite than Mander, but Postman is still a POB, which means a print-oriented... Can you say the word, Dave?
You mean the
B-A-S-T-A-R-D?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can say it because I am, but, you know, the thing is, by birth, what's your excuse?
I don't want to cause any problems here. So POB is a print-oriented B-A-S-T-A-R-D, or a pink-oriented B-A-S-T-A-R-D. Postman, because of his investment in the archetypal values of the print medium, misses the services of our new situation. I mean, you heard on the Furry Lynch show how Dr. Beter expressed how we were freed from a nuclear war situation in 1982. Part of the reasons McLuhan would point out is that the peace that passes all technology is the effect of our software technologies, which prevented us from having nuclear war because no military secret cabal could implement successfully over a duration of time the effects to create the hysteria for a nuclear war, because the television mixed corporate media, mixed corporate media environment bombarded us and therefore was not able to be hijacked by any secret cabal. So the mixed corporate media environment saved us from nuclear destruction, and that point is not understood in Jerry Mander's book, The Four Arguments.
Uh-huh.
So technology the mixed corporate media electric environment consisting of radio, computer, satellite, and television, and the computer chip, saved us over the last 30 years from the biblical prophecy of Armageddon and apocalypse. Paradoxically, we are in a bigger apocalypse because we are floating. We have been discarnated. We have been destroyed and obliterated, but that's only from the point of view of language. Our hidden center, our collective hidden center, hasn't been. Now, if we had nuclear Armageddon, that would have blown up the first nature, and maybe we would have lost our first collective hidden center. But we haven't, so we have to recover awareness of our hidden center by sorting through this linguistic confusion of the virtual landscape.
The rise of iconography?
Yeah.
Okay.
What about it? That's post-alphabetic writing.
Well, that's what Postman's premise, basic premise is.
You know, yeah, I mean, that's what Reverend Stang presents as me, an icon, a picture of my father as an icon, right? And because we have a bias toward iconography and can't read the alphabet anymore, then the image of my father is more popular than the image of me.
I'm going to have to butt in here just a minute to say you're listening to KPFK Los Angeles. This program is Genesis of a Music. My name is David Porter, and my guest is Bob Dobbs. Go ahead.
Finnegan's Wake, the main character, HCE, is an icon. And Joyce understood the bias of an icon-generated culture. So if you say iconography is what we're trying to weave and x-ray and penetrate in perception, then you're right. Iconography is what we're dealing with today. Now think of it as icon and earcon. The movie is an extension of the icon, and the radio and television is an extension of the earcon. And it is a con, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Shall we move on?
Thank you, Bob. You're welcome.
And for more information on Bob, you can contact his L.A. Office at area code 310-306-7330. That's 306-7330. 7330. And you're lucky and you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like you to explain the ways in which this... other cataclysm, this spiritual cataclysm is happening that you're talking about in all the other planes.
Well, if you the best quick reading on that is William Irwin Thompson's book. It came out, I think, in 91, 92, The American Replacement of Nature, where he talks about LSD appropriated the astral body. All right?
Okay.
And then virtual reality technologies, the technologies huckstered by the Mondo 2000 magazine, they are going to appropriate and are appropriating the etheric body. But the final stage will be the appropriating of our physical minds, or whatever the mind is within our bodies. when, and Hans Moravec describes this, William Irwin Thompson quotes Hans Moravec, he describes how he believes that we will be able to take the physical mind, in other words, the body bodies, not the astral body or the etheric body, but the mental, we'll call it the physical body, which has a mind or a brain, they'll be able to appropriate that. And if your limbs die and your other organs die, they will have this mind, physical mind, in a computer lattice that then can grow new legs and arms and therefore preserve the personality or the mind part of the physical body, keep that immortal while regenerating the physical. So he says the new technology that Hans Moravec is working for will appropriate the physical body. So LSD appropriated the astral body, virtual technologies appropriate the etheric body, and the new technologies in the next 10 years will appropriate the physical body, what Terrence McKenna calls hardwiring the soul. All right?
Well, in what way is that a cataclysm?
Well, then those other planes, which were organized to deal with the soul when it died and went to this other dimension, if people in this dimension have hijacked the passage, the areas that the soul goes through when it dies, so that it's here, then where are they? The people here, if they have negative motives, could stop and control the reincarnation process and prevent souls from reincarnating in the old first nature sense of going through the physical body. If the physical body has been put inside a computer lattice, computer matrix, then how will you get back in the body unless you go through the policing apparatus that the scientists have in the laboratory? You see what I'm saying?
So you actually believe in reincarnation?
Yeah. Maybe the scientists don't, but those people who are quite certain that we survive death and live in other dimensions and then reincarnate, they are very concerned, and I can assure you personally that there is reincarnation. I know, I've experienced it, I'm aware of it. So those religions that talk about reincarnation are in general right, even though they anthropomorphize it and confuse it. And it's actually not good to believe in Buddhism or Hinduism or any doctrines that believe in reincarnation, because those orthodoxies confuse what actually happens when you reincarnate. If you want to know more about reincarnation, then you could get my tape from the number that Dave Porter gives out where the death process is explained. I broadcast that on Toronto Radio, and that's available. But assuming that I'm right, that reincarnation exists, you have a satanic intelligence, maybe, hijacking the physical body so that souls cannot reincarnate unless they go through this man-made process that Hans Moravec is working on developing. So that's the threat to the astral, to the other, that's the threat to us, is that our normal process of dying and returning to the physical plane, and this physical plane is the best of all possible worlds, that's why humans are greater than the angels, that's a biblical concept, because this is the best of all possible worlds, if it gets aborted or it gets interfered with by scientists, then we have a new metaphysical problem.
In what ways have we disappeared, and in what ways haven't we disappeared? It seems to me like everything is animation at times. Everything is a cartoon.
Yes, that's the iconography. Remember in Understanding Media, the chapter on cartoons and comics, in that book by Mark McLuhan, he calls it Mad Vestibule to TV. So the cartoon form, not just cartoons per se, but the iconography of the cartoon bounding profile, that is the effect and content of television. So all presidents become cartoon images. So the cartoon is the last form before you turn into the tactile mosaic of the TV screen. So that's why Finnegan's Wake is a cartoon. HVE is a cartoon figure. So yes, you would naturally, I mean, that's why kids started liking Mad Magazine and Sick Magazine in the 50s, because under the effect of the new American TV environment, life did become a cartoon. So it's natural today to see life as a cartoon, and for many people that's an alienating experience. Or it could be celebrating, but it's a limited experience because you're only seeing the effect of television. And you've got to get past the effect of television and see the form of television. Now,
what you were asking me about the hidden center, right? The part of you that is eternal is one moment. And all of us live in that one moment where all our lives in all the other dimensions exist at the same time. That hidden center is not affected by what goes on in the physical plane ultimately. But within the confusion of the different lives, which are language, we think we are limited by that. So the hidden center never disappears. It's only one moment. It only happened for one moment, and many people think it's an eternal moment, but you can't put a time dimension on it. But within the experience of that one moment, which is the content of that one moment, which is language for humans, there's much confusion and a sense of coming and going. So when the history of media is presented in our evolution, when they absorb themselves like a black hole or a sun dying, which we did by 1977, where the satellite environment absorbed the TV, radio, and computer environment, and it ate itself, then we had the after image of that disappearance, and now we're into the 1990-2020 period where Bob explains how this happened, which then reawakens us. That situation is what gives us the illusion that we have disappeared. And as far as we're in this dimension, we have disappeared. But not from the perspective of that one moment. You see what I'm saying?
Kind of. I'm going to have to listen to the tape of the show to, really let it sink in.
Yeah, it's meant to be heard over and over again. I don't mean you to see all the levels as I speak it. But we are... The idea that the mind-body duality is a mistake. The idea that we are... The Western dualism, the Cartesian dualism that people rant against today, that has to be understood as an effect of visual space. But from the hidden center point of view, we are dual. That's the mystery. Our hidden center is dual. It's not a problem, but it's dual. It's only culturally the Western man has emphasized the dual image and misses the unified image of the East or of the South or of the pre-literate cultures or of the post-literate cultures. But when you realize we are two things in that one moment, then you'll be able to understand and be happier with the duality that you feel no matter where you are on this plane or any other plane.
In what way is... You've described television like LSD, but when I've watched television, to me it seems more like a bad cocaine hallucination.
Right. Now, television's more like heroin, really. But here's the thing.
In Congress.
If you read Jonathan Miller's book, where he criticizes Marshall McLuhan, he shows scientifically that all the effects that Marshall describes in his writings are ridiculous in scientific terms. And what Miller missed is, of course they are ridiculous. Television does not affect your brain in a tactile sense, you privately. But it affects whole groups of people. And what Miller didn't understand that Marshall was talking about the effects on the general or on the crowd. And for the crowd, television is an extension of the central nervous system. So you are not going to feel the difference between a book and a movie and a television, per se, on your physiology. You might get it slightly, and a drug will seem more potent than television. But for the whole society of our time, television is an LSD for the whole crowd, for the whole group of users of the global theater. So we're talking about the general, the crowd, and the effects of media on the crowd. And that brings in Manichaean satire. But the effects of the media have not much on you, and if you think something's more cocaine than LSD, that's your subjective user as content perception, and that's not something that you will feel as a lasting impression. I mean, you can then walk out of the room after watching TV and go play baseball. All right? You are not disappeared. But for the general, call it capital G general. The general is the word. And the Bible begins, in the beginning was the Word. The Word talks about the general. And the general is what makes us human as opposed to other parts of nature. So we're talking about the effects of the general. And media, you know, if we only had one television set in this world, then it would not be the general. It's only when the television set becomes an environment, or when the computer, personal computer, becomes an environment and millions of people are using it, then the general happens.
And what it does is it affects the previous general, which is previous languages. Previous languages. So, Miller misses the point that Marshall was miming language, talking about language. He wasn't talking about what the book does to you. When you read a book, you don't feel that your eye is intensified and your ear, you know, you can't measure it if you use scientific laboratory equipment. You don't see the eye go up and the ear go down. Now, there's a paradox that comes into this. Herbert Krugman for General Electric proved that television affected our brain waves differently from newspapers in an experiment in 1970. So everything that I just said has to consider the paradoxical information that media do affect us individually. But that's not the level that Marshall talked on. That's why when he heard about Krugman's proving his theory, he moved on. He says, I'm not concerned about scientific discoveries. I want to make more insights. I want to make more insightful discoveries. Because he's talking about the general. That's why there's no personal opinion of the personal life of Marshall is not in his writings. The fact that he was a Catholic has nothing to do with what he wrote. Because he was miming language, talking about language, which Finnegan's Wake is the triumphant expression of in completion. All right? So listen to the tape of this and call me in 2 months.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
And caller, you've been patient. You're on the air with Bob Dobbs.
Hello? Hello. My name is Jan. I know exactly what you're talking about. I have been there. I have seen everything you're talking about. I've been recruiting people in this myself.
Do we know about you doing this?
What's that?
Do we have any awareness of you doing this?
I don't know if you guys do yourself. I do work with Timothy Leary and Terrence McKenna, Dennis McKenna.
Where do you do that?
Steve Covey.
What's Where that? Do you do that work?
Excuse me?
Where do you work with them?
Actually, I work for the, I don't even know if I should say this, I work for the California Hemp Initiative.
Right.
You know, the staff of life, as we call it.
So do you know,
What's that?
Do you know, what's the guy here in New York City, the old yippie, Dale or...
New York City. Oh, shoot. Anyway, what I wanted to try and do was...
You know, they're talking about this new drug. Washington says they're going to study it. The Ecobane?
Oh, I'm not sure about that. See, what I wanted to try and mention was you were explaining it very clearly in many ways that I have seen exactly everything you're talking about and what the government's doing, enslaving the people through television and everything else. And, I've been going around and telling people this information and explaining it to them through quantum physics.
Dana Beale. You ever heard of Dana Beale?
Dana Beale.
Yeah, that's what
I just eliminated myself 3 weeks ago.
He's talked about this new drug called Epogaine, I think it is, which he says will cure drug addiction.
It's an old drug.
And Washington is apparently, some institute there is going to investigate this. You're not aware of that? Dana
Beale
talked a lot about
this. Like I said, I just broke through 3 weeks ago and figured all this stuff out. I've been putting it together piece by piece for the last 5 years.
Have you been doing this while stoned?
Yes, obviously, yeah. And then I realized how to do it through quantum physics on an LSD trip, and then when I reached about 10 hits, I realized that I was very close, but LSD is missing a particular molecule that can be found in the psilocybin mushrooms.
That's right, mescaline is better.
Well, mescaline gets you to Mescalito, the god, to teach you the way to live.
Yes,
but psilocybin teaches you the true power. The psilocybin contains all the molecules that show you what's going on. It brings you to God himself and where you can ask any question and get that answer.
Right. Now, that's relevant to your hidden center.
Right. That's true.
Now, what I'm talking about is this information you're giving is not relevant. You're expressing your point of view. You're expressing your knowledge based on your personal experience. That's not relevant to the collective media ecology we have to engage in, which is when we go public and talk in any form to the group, we have to use this language based
right.
on the tetrad or based on what I'm talking about. This language is the only thing you should talk about when you get on the media.
Right.
Because because that is what we can share collectively. The crowd needs to become aware of itself. The crowd cannot become aware of itself via hemp and things like that. What about the million uses of psychedelics that they're lying about?
You're getting zapped.
What's that?
Your phone is getting zapped. Say it again.
My phone is being tapped.
Is that you just were fading out? Can you say what you said again?
I can't even comprehend what I was saying just now.
Well, try again.
I just totally spaced out.
Let me ask you one thing,
yeah,
caller.
You're getting blipped by the discount effect. See, your hemp didn't prepare you for this encounter with me.
Oh no, yeah. What I was saying was hemp is the doorway to open to get everybody to realize.
Not everybody,
to get a lot of people to realize
this.
How do you translate that into
every 1,000 industrial uses of hemp? Then maybe they're lying about an infinite million number of possibilities capable with psychedelic drugs, which is totally true.
Caller.
You know, the yin and yang theory is just incredible. You know, what we have here, there has to be an exact opposite.
That's right.
Inverting the soul. So if the soul is inside your head here, that means that there are collective souls on the other side.
But not only is there the opposite, you have to think not in schizophrenic terms, but in quadraphenic terms.
Right. I've
and
also been going through all of my music, and I've found that any band has produced over three albums.
Four-part structure.
Any band you have made it through, and all bands are singing about the exact same thing.
Earth to caller. Caller, did we get it on the ballot?
We're going to have to sue to get it on the ballot, probably. We may make the 96, but we are going to sue to get it on the ballot. For
why? Why
well, caller, let me tell you something.
Wait a minute.
In America, because that's not the American tradition. That's not the American archetype. And all you're getting in the virtual landscape is an American hologram. And the characteristics of the American hologram is never legalized drugs. So other parts of the world will legalize drugs. But America will probably never legalize drugs, hence the popularity of Rush Limbaugh's view, because that's the American archetype.
Well, we
got to
change the...
So you're not aware
you
of the cultural limits of this
world,
program.
The world,
it'll never work in the United States, because as long as we have the hologram of America, which is going to happen for a long time, as a mythic stage, as a holopathic retrieval, then those living in that environment and identifying with it will never allow the history of America to be spoiled by, from their point of view, by the legalization of drugs. That's your problem.
Right. Well, like I said, it's education and getting people to just begin to open their minds. You know, I've seen, when
and
I've
then
gone
leave the
out
country.
And explained to people
open their
what's
mind,
going on,
move to another company,
and how to get there.
I mean, marijuana was
energy,
legalized in Germany, right?
Physical matter and all of that being composed of protons, neurons, and electrons, that means that the soul being this energy and all physical matter being this energy, then that means it's all the same thing, and reaching a point of meditation, lack of concentration, you know, through, like if you're meditating for many, many years, you're going to be able to achieve a level of meditation with less concentration because you practiced it every day.
Caller, we're going to have to move on because we only got a couple of minutes.
All of that concentration
Earth
needed
to caller.
To level of meditation to actually break you through.
We're going to have to move on, caller, because we only have a couple of minutes, and I want to get on to something here. That's very interesting what you said, Bob. What is it about the American mythos that, we did make alcohol illegal, but then we had to bring it back?
That's right, but not drugs, because it's contrary
wait a minute.
Kinetic space. Drugs enhance tactile space. Kinetic space.
Wait a minute. Alcohol and tobacco and coffee are drugs.
Yeah, they're drugs, but the marijuana, LSD, heroin, they enhance the tactile sensorium. So they're tactile drugs, or what you almost could say Leary calls them soft drugs, and then there's the hard drugs, or the Republican drugs he calls cocaine and certain drugs, alcohol, right?
Yeah, okay, we've just got a couple of minutes. Now that we've clarified that, what is it about the American mythos?
It's kinetic space. It identifies with alcohol in particular because alcohol is the only drug that can make the kinetic man social. And so in the 30s, they had to re-legalize it because it was the only way to dissipate the social strains of kinetic space that is America. And as long as the hologram, the holopathic retrieval of kinetic space, is identified with America, then it will never allow an acknowledgement of tactile space, which is the hemp program.
Well, let's delve down a little deeper. We've got about 1 minute to do this. So delve down just a little deeper and explain a little more about the character of the American mythos.
Kinetic space?
In a minute, as it relates to why we can't allow the tactility.
It's Mr. America, the man with muscles. In other words, when the kinetic space is industrial and early electric technologies, the movie, the car, and the radio, where you have a combination of the old mechanical technologies and the new electric form. That's what the car and the movie are. They're a combination. So Mr. America is stuck in between the mechanical, which is the muscular. Mechanical technologies are an extension of the muscles, and the electric. So his icon, the image of the bodybuilding Arnold Schwarzenegger, Mr. America, a huge, bulging, sculptured body image, is a beginning of the tactile sculptural effect of the electric environment, but emphasizing the muscular content.
Okay, I got you. It's kind of like making fun of people for having brains.
That's right.
Okay, well, you know, this has been very interesting this morning. Bob will be back. Callers, he can't take any more. He has to leave. Pinks are on his tail. He'll be back on July 23rd. Once again, for information, you can call area code 310-306-7330. That's the fourth time I've given that number out. Bob, thank you for being with me this morning.
Great show, Dave. Thanks a lot.
And we'll see you in 2 months.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.